Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Rajiv Khanna for immigration.com. Today is November 19th, 2009. This is a community call. It is being recorded. If you do not wish to be recorded, please hang up now. This call does not mean that we have agreed to be our lawyers or you our clients. Basically, this is a call for community service and to spread as much information as we can. Just before I got started, somebody had asked me a question about H-1 visas and the difficulty associated with getting an H-1 visa. There are several sets of issues that are connected to it, and one day I'll sit down and write this out on my blog whenever I have some time. But typically, if you are for example, an IT professional, typically some red flags are the following. When you go for an H-1 visa stamping, if you are working at a client site, be prepared to be able to provide a contact and a letter at the client site which can verify what you do, and that the control of your employment remains with your employer who pays your salary. So that's one thing. When you're at a client site, you may be asked to produce a letter from the client site, or they may even call your supervisor. They don't usually do that, but they can. So client site placement is one thing. Second thing is they want to look at your LCA and make sure that you are approved for the site where you're working. That's another red flag. Third red flag or third thing that they notice is whether your degrees are related to the field you're in. For example, if you have a BCom and you're working as a software engineer, a degree in commerce and software engineering may not match, but then again it may match if you have several years of experience as a software developer. Typically about 3 years should be enough. But if you have a degree completely unrelated to what you're doing, for example, you have a degree in fine arts and you're working as a software engineer with 6 years of experience, they may not accept that. Okay. And even if INS has approved the case, they can revisit that issue and they put you in Vishwanath just asked me, administrative processing. So if they put you in administrative processing, it can delay you for several weeks or several months. Another category of people who can have problems, let me just make sure I've covered all the things that I can think of. There are LCAs or wages, yes. They want to make sure you've been paid regularly, routinely. Sometimes they can ask your employer to provide information not only on you, but all their H-1 employees to show that they've been paying everybody on a timely basis. So these things can get complicated if the counselor wants to make it complicated. Another set of employees who can have problems are those who are working in any kind of technology that could have weapons-grade applications. They can be delayed because INS wants to do the various checks like Visa Mentes and all those checks that basically go into their security. So if you are in the technology alert list, the TAL list, which most IT people are not, but let's say chemistry or microbiology or anybody who's working with things that could have weapon applications, they might take a little longer to get processed. These are the type of problems we are typically seeing. I'm going to put you back into question and answer mode. Vishwanath, you can press *6 on the phone. Vishwanath?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So basically, that's pretty much the way it's working right now. A lot of people are getting their visas without any issue, but some people are stuck there for months and months and months. If they find something objectionable, they'll say, we're putting you in administrative processing. Next thing is, they've sent your paperwork back to INS to rescind or revoke the visa, or revoke the H-1 approval.
Okay.
Okay, and that means basically several months later, your employer will get a letter from INS saying, we intend to revoke this H-1 because we have received information that this H-1 should not have been approved.
I see.
Okay, so a lot of people are comfortable going to Canada or Mexico or third country and getting their visa processed there. Especially if they have American degrees, it might be easier. There is a law on the books that says if your visa is denied, you can't come back into USA. As a matter of practice, that has not been an issue so far. People have been coming back in, even after denials. But there is a possibility if you get denied, you might have to fly back to your home country from there.
I see. Okay.
These are the red flags that you need to watch out for. The LCA, where you're approved for, where you're working, your wages are getting paid, you have access to client letters, etc. These are the things that you need to watch out for the most.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Good luck, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Okay, thanks everyone. I just started off on a little tangent here. I'm getting to the questions. Some of these questions, a couple of these questions I will not be able to answer. But most of the questions looked routine. One question, first question is Chad. I plan to file green card for my mom since I'm a U.S. citizen. Filed for her I-130, which was approved. I indicated that we will do CP, but now she's here. Can I change to AOS? Sanjay, you can change to AOS. That is no problem at all. You can change to AOS anytime you want. The only thing I'm a little concerned about is if she enters USA with a preconceived intention of changing to you know, green card, USCIS can conceivably find that problematic. If after a few months of living here she changes her mind, that would be a lot easier for you and for her. So that would be one thing you could think about. What documents are needed later? Birth certificate, yes. If her marriage certificate, if her father is also going to apply. And you can start collecting these documents. Best thing is just read the instructions on form I-485. Okay. Next question is user 88 who has a 3.5-year diploma plus 3-year BS. Firm is under process. I have a 3.5-year diploma plus 3 years BS from BITS in information systems and 5+ years of experience. Okay. How likely is one to get approved? I just did a consultation today for somebody, and my only problem was, look, even if you have a diploma and not a complete degree, at least an EB3 is not a problem. So your labor certification should be drafted in such a way that it is made clear to INS that even if the EB2 is denied, EB3 should be able to be approved. So I can't comment about the education. Normally, they don't allow you to combine degrees, and they don't allow you to combine diplomas with degrees normally for a bachelor's degree or EB3. For EB2, you can combine degrees. Okay? Now, the problem is, your case has already been filed and approved, or, you know, you're talking about the I-140 stage. So, actually, this planning has to be done at the perm stage, before the papers are filed. How likely is it that you get approved? Hard for me to say. It depends upon the language of the labor certification. If my I-140 is rejected, can I file... hang on. Let me just put everybody on mute again. Just one second. Okay, so getting back to what I was saying, so it all depends upon how they have drafted the labor certification. If my I-140 is rejected, can I file a new EB3 I-140 using same perm labor? Very unlikely, unless there was some mistake made. You can always file repeat I-140s, yes, but they're not going to get approved unless there was some error made in the first I-140. What are the proper words that should be used in perm? I don't know how to describe that. It depends upon the case. But normally, an EB3 is available for any job that requires a bachelor's degree at a minimum, or, not and, or 2 years of experience. So an EB3 is available if a bachelor's degree is required or 2 years of experience is required. EB2 is available if a master's degree or bachelor's plus 5 years is minimally required. Okay? There isn't much you can do before filing the I-140 that I can think of just in a snap discussion. But that's the general overview of what you're heading into. Question 2009, E2 question. They are Canadian citizens. And this is a very common problem I've seen. Their case was approved by INS, USCIS, but then when they went for visa stamping, the consulate denied the E2. This is such a common problem. And part of it is that the criteria that the consulate goes by are so dumb sometimes. I hate to say that. One example is in one of our E2 cases, even though there was substantial investment, the consulate wanted to know, well, you know, let's say the asset was worth $6 million and the guy had put in $2 million. And the consulate wanted to know, why did he not put the entire $6 million? And the answer was, that's the cost of acquisition. The cost of acquisition is not the same thing as cost of business. They have to make a determination that these two things are different. INS accepts that. a lot of times council, especially Toronto, can really be a pain. It's so difficult to convince them. I think we've done a couple of cases where they were convinced after denying that they went ahead and approved the case. But this becomes a big problem. So in your case, your daughters are under 21. They are in USA. But the problem is, you see, they are dependent upon you. If you don't have the E2, then they don't have the E2. Okay? So only thing they can do is probably they can go to F1 visa, convert to F1 status, apply for F1, or come back with an I-20 form and re-enter USA with an F1 status. It's a very sympathetic case. I think they should be able to get an F1. Because unless you get your status extended, they can't get theirs. Okay? F1 appears to be the obvious choice. I'm looking at the rest of your questions. They have their I-94. They have no legal status, unfortunately. Okay? Try to get into the F1 option, okay? Next question is RARC. I'm currently in my second year of master's program, F1 OPT problem. He wants to know, or she wants to know, that if I only have 8 months, can I still get OPT? I think, please look at the regulations. If I remember correctly, and the regulation is, I think, 8 CFR section 214, and under that, subsection F for student visa. Look at HCFR 214, and I think it tells you what they want is two full academic semesters. And if instead of 9 months, it's 8 months for you, I don't think that should be a problem. Double check with your international student's office. Even though it is 8 months, you should still be able to get OPT, because if it is two full semesters, academic semesters, that's what the regulation says. Tubisit has two petty theft convictions. No contest, basically, that is counted as a conviction, I guess, under immigration law. The question is, can I apply for a citizenship now, or should I wait from 5 years from the date of the conviction? Well, it's a tough one. My instinct says we should wait 5 years. After 5 years, we should apply. Okay? But remember, if you apply now and you get denied, you can always apply again. But the problem is, it becomes such a glaring issue. Next time when you file another citizenship application, it will become an issue again. So I prefer that you apply for your... This is my personal advice. I haven't researched this issue thoroughly. But my feeling, gut feeling is, we should apply... more than five years after the conviction. The reason being, typically INS only looks at the last 5 years. And the questions on Form N-400 are all directed to the last 5 years. They can, theoretically, they can go for as far back as they want on this issue of, moral fitness. But typically, they don't go beyond 5 years. But if you already have a denial, let's say you apply today, 6 months later they deny you, then you file again after 5-6 years, then it becomes a very obvious redlined issue that comes up, right away, that jumps at the adjudication officer. I would consider waiting for more than 5 years. Okay. Now, the spouse's citizenship may not get you any benefit that I can think of in these circumstances. So, okay, I'll move on to the next one, which is Scottish. I have been issued an L1 visa, entered USA for the first time in October. Immigration pulled you aside. You have an assault charge on your criminal record. The crime did not involve any moral turpitude. I'm a bit confused what to do. As I've been told by my company that you only need a waiver if you get denied a visa. I agree. They did not deny you entry into the U.S. They then advised me I need a waiver to travel to U.S. Oh, okay, they did tell you that you need a waiver. I think what they're talking about is something called 212D waiver, D as in doctor, 212D waiver. Okay? And the consulate says you don't need a waiver. But when you arrived, immigration pulled you aside in Houston. I'm assuming what you're talking about is when you entered USA, at the airport, they put you through secondary inspection. And they told you you need a waiver. But this is what I don't understand. What I don't understand is, are you in the United States right now? If you are, they would not have let you enter the United States if you needed a waiver. 212D waivers have to be obtained before you travel. So I'm a little confused about your facts, but if the consulate says you do not need a waiver, you should not need a waiver. That would be my feeling. But remember again, these agencies are pretty messed up. Not everybody knows all the law. Depends upon who you met at the consulate. If they knew what they were talking about, you know, that's a lot of things there that I can't really comment about. A lot depends upon whether you are inside USA right now or not. If you are not in USA, you should go back to the consulate and tell them that you want to apply for a waiver anyway because you were not allowed to enter US. Consulate will then forward the waiver to USCIS. They'll take the forms and forward the waiver. So the best I can advise you is impress upon the consulate that you were turned back from the airport. You need to file the waiver. They need to forward it to USCIS. But if you are in the United States, I would sit tight and do nothing. Okay? Next question. Of course, one thing you can do is you can also go through your congressman's office, local congressman's office, and see if they can pull up more information on this if you are in USA. Okay? Sprint PCS 2006, Protecting Surviving Family Law. I have EAD AP through my wife's green card application. She passed away last month. And this law was passed 13 days after. Am I eligible to continue her green card? Do I need to apply for H-1B? Let me clarify a couple of things. First thing is that I haven't read what is called the Widow Protection Act or the Widow Protection Law. I haven't spent too much time with it because we hardly ever run into these situations. Okay, and I think it applies only to family-based cases, not to employment-based cases. Again, I haven't read the law. I know that exists. Other people in my firm might have taken a look at that law because they are more involved with the family-based cases. I am pretty much focusing my entire attention on employment-based cases. Okay, now, am I eligible to continue her green card? Don't know the answer to that question. Do I need to apply for H-1B? Always a good idea. Always a good idea. My lawyer told me since I'm going to India for an extended period of time, it is not advisable to go for H-1B. Instead, stay on the AP. I don't see any problem even with keeping the H-1B because as long as you have an explanation as to why you are gone for that long and as long as the employer still has a job for you, even maintaining an H-1B is a good idea. Okay? I haven't read this surviving family law, surviving family member law, the so-called widow protection rule. I haven't read through it. If I do, over the next few weeks, I'll definitely post something on my blog. Right now, I haven't had time to do that. Sorry. Next question, Raj Image, H-1B extension and I-140. My I-140 is approved. H-1B extension for 3 years, currently 7 years, current employer expected next 16 days. So H-1B extension is coming. If I get approved, I want to switch job to a different employer after the approval. Is there a problem? Both jobs are very different. Well, I do have the intent to come back to this current job and I get the green card. You can do that, okay? You can do that, but you've got to have a good explanation. I keep talking about this. I think we talk about it almost every conference call that we've done, that if you want to change employers while the green card is going on and you have the intention to come back to that job, there's nothing in law that stops you. If by any chance my current employer withdraws my I-140, will my H-1 extension be automatically canceled? No. Interesting thing is that even though under the law, USCIS may have the power to revoke already given H-1 extensions, they rarely do. I have not known of, let me rephrase that, I have never seen them do it. So they should not be taking away your existing H-1B. Once they've given it, they probably will not take it away. Does my current employer get to know if I do find another job and they are willing to transfer my current H-1B? No. No. INS does not call the old employer or contact the old employer about a new H-1B. They should not. Are they bound to withdraw my I-140? No, they are not. Can they keep the process going? Yes, they can. As long as they have the intention to hire you and you have the intention to join them. When is it safe to join the other job? I would join only when the H-1 is approved. I would not change employers before that. Okay. Another question from the same individual. I usually don't do that. Let me take a quick look. My wife was offered a job after extensive interviews, and then they refused to do an H-1B. Okay, is there anything we can do about it? No, you cannot. It's the university's choice. They don't want to process an H-1B. You cannot make them do it. There is nothing you can do about it. Next question, H-1 visa stamping. I'm planning to make a visit to India next month. Current H-1 stamping is expiring 31st December. Do I need to attend? Do I need to go for the visa stamping if I come back to U.S. on the 25th? No, you don't. If you land in USA even one day before your visa is expiring, I don't see any problem with that. So you should not have to go for visa stamping. Okay. Next question, renewing national passport. This is another one of those questions I will not be able to answer. This is a question from an asylum applicant. So my apologies, I don't know anything about asylum laws. Last time I did an asylum case, political asylum case, was 20 years ago, and that too as a favor to somebody. So don't trust my word on it. Sorry, I can't answer your question. Sigh for green card regarding dependents I-485. The situation is applied 485 in August 2007, whole family, denied, due to underlying I-140 being denied on a 3-year degree basis. Applied motion to reopen, also denied. Applied another motion, also denied. During all this appeal time, I joined with a new company and started a new green card process. I-140 approved. When this new I-140 was approved, USCIS reopened my 485 by themselves and linked this. That's very unusual. Very, very unusual. But they did not reopen my dependents I-45. How can I get my dependents I-45 reopened? Go to the congressman, local congressman. This, what they do is, USCIS has created such a mess. There is no reason, if they are reopening your case, they should automatically reopen your dependents case also. So my advice would be to go ahead and go through a congressman. Plan on traveling Sai only after this situation has been cleared up, because I don't know whether your I-140 linkage with a denied 485 is on purpose or whether it's a mistake, because normally they cannot link an I-140 to a 485 that has been denied unless the 485 was also reopened. Therefore, even traveling during this time would be a bad idea. But if you have an H-1B and you get an H-1B visa, then traveling is no issue. You can go and come back. Next question. Oh, by the way, before you travel, make sure your lawyers know about it, because there are some issues about traveling when your motion to reopen is pending. I don't even know if your motion to reopen is pending right now. Next question is MCASAS, MCASAS. I want to apply for an H-1B. I'm a Colombian architect, living in New York since December 31st, 2008 on a tourist visa. Went home for a couple of times to approve the, to get the extension of tourist visa. Okay. A small architectural firm in Fort Lauderdale is interested in hiring me. They're beginning a project of a school building in Colombia. I tell you one thing. I have a real problem with people trying to convert from B to H, because when you try to convert from B to H status, consulates can decline any future visas because they can say, well, you entered USA saying you're going to go for a short period of time, then you convert it to a long-term visa. So if you do go from B to H, you may want to go for it through consular processing, not within USA. Right now, there are H-1 visas available. The fact that the firm is small should not be by itself a problem, because we've had cases where there were only one employee companies and we were still able to get H-1s processed. So what I think you should do, Marcella, is this. You should talk with a lawyer, get the case moving as quickly as possible. As long as the employer has a good job, a good faith job for you, it is definitely a situation in which you want to hire a lawyer. Do not try to do it yourself. Okay? Make sure you do it by the book, and make sure you let them know that you are right now on a tourist visa. Okay? So, by itself, tourist visa is not a problem, but it's a good idea to let your lawyers help you make that decision how best to handle it. Next question is ML Phone. They want an EB-5 investor. They are a small Florida-based business that's looking for an investor. Sir, I cannot be involved with this. No lawyer should be, because if we are the lawyer and also the person bringing you the investment, I think there's a conflict of interest. Okay? So if an investor came to us and said we wanted to invest and, you know, this is what we want you to do, do the paperwork for EB-5, that's no problem. But if I take the investment and say, look, Mr. Client, here is an investment, that I think is a conflict of interest. I wouldn't want to do it. To me, it is a very awkward situation to be in. So not much I can do, sorry. Next question, disabled me. This is a very strange and, you know, nasty situation in some ways, because you have a stroke, you got a stroke and you went into a long-term disability situation, and employer wants to let you go. What will happen to my green card if I'm employed and continue on unpaid leave with the employer? This is such a difficult case to advise on for a bunch of things. First of all, there are two kinds of disability payments that I have recently learned about. I didn't have to, but somebody pointed that out to me a few days ago. I thought when people talked about disability, they always talked about private insurance. Look, as long as somebody takes private insurance disability, that has no effect on their visa status. Okay? If somebody can't work because of a disability, their visa status should be kept intact. Even if you're on H-1B and there's a medical reason you can't work, you shouldn't be considered to be out of status. Okay? Taking the money is concerned, it's private insurance, it's not government funding, so it shouldn't be a problem. Then somebody pointed out to me that there is some supplementary social security disability benefits. I haven't looked into that situation. Because SSI benefits may become a bar to your green card or to your H-1. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if it's considered to be means tested or what it is considered to be, any kind of reflection on your ability to support yourself, not to become public charge. So I don't know the answer to the Social Security part of the thing. But if you are taking private insurance, that shouldn't be a problem. Your questions are three. If I'm employed and continue on unpaid leave, can I still go on with my green card? The answer is yes. If the employer wants to hire you when you get your green card and you want to go back and work with them, the green card can proceed forward on those basis. If terminated by employer and H-1B is canceled, what will happen to my green card? Green card can still go on if they want to hire you back in the future. Number three, is there any other option if terminated? Well, if your 485 is pending, hang on 1 second. Your 485 is pending for 180 days, and your I-140 is approved, you can do AC-21 transfer to another employer, Kavi. Those are the choices that I see. Today's questions were only the ones that I've answered so far. Sorry, I couldn't answer a couple of questions there. But I basically answer everything that I know off the top of my head. So let me open the call for people who might have questions related to what we've talked about. Hi guys, press star 6 to talk to me. Hello? Can everybody hear me? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Can you guys hear me? Were you able to hear the conference?
Yes, I was able to hear throughout.
Okay, good. For a moment, I thought it was something.
Yeah, nobody
called. Last time it happened, nobody could hear me.
Yeah, the remaining question, therefore I didn't talk anything.
Okay, go ahead. You have any questions, go ahead, please.
So my question is not yet come, therefore I was quiet.
Didn't see any other questions. I thought I have answered everything.
Oh, you answered everything? No, there are some 3 more questions, 16, 17,
18. Really? Huh. Wow, I must have missed some questions. Let me go back to, hang on, I'm sorry. I thought I had only finished. Just give me 1 second. Let me go and pull back the questions. I guess what they sent to me is missing some information. Just give me a second.
17, 18, and 19.
Oh, no problem. We'll get to it in a second. I'm logging back into our website. Last question asked was about disability.
Number 16.
Just 1 second. I don't have the numbers. They sent it to me in printable format that takes.
Okay.
So let me just. I'm now going on to the website, so I'll have the numbers. Okay, going back to November 19th conference call. Let's see what we got. Question number 6, 7, 18. Okay. Here it is. 16 was long-term disability. 17 is, okay, EAD and AC21. Let's look at that. Rajdeep Singham. I'm on EAD with 45 pending for my family. 45 pending since July 2007, EB3 category. I-140 was approved. February 2009. My questions are, what are the things I need to make sure before joining the new employer? My current employer is in Illinois. My expected future employment would be in New Jersey. Can changing locations be a problem? Under AC21, changing locations is absolutely no problem. Only thing you need to worry about is the jobs must be similar, same or similar. Question number 2. The future employer is asking me this question. Do you need a sponsorship for employment? No, you do not. You do not. All you need is a letter that describes the job and states that the job is not temporary. Okay? So, it's great if they can do an H-1 transfer for you and get you an H-1, but if you want to continue on EAD, that's okay too. You should read my blog. I have a bunch of information on this. Since I used a pre-approved LC for applying for my green card, can using a pre-approved LC be a problem? Oh, no, no. Once you are in AC21, it doesn't matter what the source of your labor cert is. Number 4, can my paperwork, etc., remain with my current attorney? Or do they need to be transferred to the new employer's attorney? Whose responsibility is to make sure this happens? It's your responsibility, Raj. What you want to do is make sure that your current lawyer has no problem continuing to represent you. In our firm, we take the position that for us to continue to represent you would be a conflict of interest. So we ask you to get us a waiver from your current employer. The waiver just says, Rajiv, we have no problem in your firm continuing to represent this employee even though they are changing employment. Note that we are no longer responsible for any fees, but other than that, you have our permission to continue to represent them, something like that. So yes, so it's your responsibility. And your lawyer, current lawyer, can take care of it. Next question, Sonit Taj Verma, regarding H-1B employer sending attorney lawyer letter to sue. I am working with employer A. Employer B had filed H-1B change of status. I could not join. 1 year passed. On October 1st, got selected to work with one of the clients. Okay, now he has sent me one letter to his attorney to sue if I do not pay him $3,000 and $60,000 financial loss due to not joining him. How can and should I reply to him? Can he sue me to recover H-1B processing costs? No. $60,000 financial loss? Very unlikely. Under immigration laws, that could be a problem. For question is, what should you do? Well, I think what you can do is get your lawyers to at least give a call to this opposite side lawyer and tell him, please get your client on the phone with us. All four of us should be on the phone. We want to make you aware that this is illegal what you're doing under the Department of Labor, immigration laws, etc. some of these payments are not recoverable. And if you still want to go forward with it, then you might not have a choice. You have to defend the suit and file a complaint with the Department of Labor as well as with the USCIS. Okay. Next question is MREF, L1B, L1A, green card processing probability. My question is, I entered on L1B and got my L1A. Excellent. What are the requisites to get my green card filing? See, L1A and EB1 green cards have the same criteria. So if you've got your L1A, chances of getting an EB1 through the current employer are very, very good. But if the employer is not willing to help you proceed, there is no workaround that I can think of. You can certainly apply a green card through another employer that you wish to join sometime in the future. But I can't think of any way you can do it yourself unless you meet the criteria of extraordinary ability aliens or national interest waiver. Okay? That's where you stand. Folks, go ahead with your questions, please. I think we are done with all my questions. Go ahead with your questions if you have any. Hello? The call is open. Everybody should be able to talk with me. Hello? I could have sworn there were some questions. Let me...
Hello. Hello.